now in session. The Honorable Bruce Castle presiding. All who have business before this court, draw near, and you shall be heard. God bless the United States and this honorable court. You may be seated.
Thank you. Good morning. I'm Chief Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Lance. To my left is Judge Scholin. We're here today in the matter of George Brenneser, docket number 090728. Would counsel of the parties please note your appearance for the record?
Good morning, Your Honors. I'm Michael Horan, appearing for George Brenneser.
Thank you very much.
Good morning, Your Honors. Leslie Rogal for the Secretary. Alongside me is Michael Carr.
Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Each party will have 30 minutes to present argument. Counsel for the appellant, do you wish to reserve a portion for rebuttal?
May I have 10 minutes, Your Honor?
Yes, you may. Then you may proceed.
Good morning, Chief Judge Castle. May it please this honorable court. I'm Michael Horan. I represent George Brenneser. Mr. Brenneser is a Korean War veteran. He suffered cold injuries to his feet in Korea. He's service-connected for Raynaud's phenomenon, peripheral neuropathy, and plantar fasciitis, and the VA has awarded him special monthly compensation under subsection 38 U.S.C. 1114L for loss of use of both feet. The Board of Veterans' Appeals in its February 2009 decision denied Mr. Brenneser a separate award of 8 and a 10 is based on helplessness, even though the board found as fact that Mr. Brenneser's service-connected disabilities render him so helpless that he requires the aid and attendance of another person. In this appeal, Mr. Brenneser presents two primary issues. The first issue is, what is the meaning of Section 1114-0 in the terms condition and conditions? And the second issue, Mr. Brenneser challenged the lawfulness of 38 CFR 3.350E3 because it does not give force and effect to the terms conditions or condition. Section 1114-0 provides that if the veteran, as a result of service-connected disability, has disability under conditions that would entitle...
Let me ask you a question on O. If a veteran has the loss of use of both feet and separately and distinctly needs regular aid and attendance for other disabilities that are service-connected, he would be entitled to benefits under O.
Yes, Your Honor.
And there's no, the Secretary doesn't dispute that, the Secretary can speak for themselves, but I believe the Secretary didn't dispute that. In that situation, would a veteran also be entitled to aid and attendance under R1?
Yes, Your Honor.
So even though they had loss of both feet and separately aid and attendance under L, which bumped them into O, they would then get another bump for aid and attendance under R?
That is Mr. Brenneser's argument, Your Honor.
Okay, well, your argument goes further and says that even though the anatomical loss for both feet is the cause of regular aid and attendance, it bumps into O.
Yes, sir.
Okay, I understand it.
I'd like to ask you a little bit about what do you think the term condition means in O?
I believe it means, Your Honor, the rates under L, M, or N, such as loss of use of both feet, helplessness, loss of use of both hands, that condition.
So any... we'll call it item listed under L, is a condition?
Yes, Your Honor.
It's not a disability?
No, Your Honor. It's a condition. And I think that is confirmed. On April 13th, I filed a citation of supplemental authority with the court. And what it was is a reproduction of the vet's reg as it existed before Congress amended in 1945 and the vet reg after its amendment. And if Your Honor would refer to page 4 of the citation of supplemental authority, Your Honors will see that under the regulation, conditions refers back to loss or loss of use. So before the amendment, conditions referred back to the rates under L, M, or N. And what Congress did in 1945, helplessness could not be combined with other losses or loss use. That's why there was an amendment in 1945 so that...
Was helplessness covered at all prior to 1945?
It was, Your Honor, it was in subsection L. But under the vet reg before its amendment, because it only referred to anatomical loss or loss of use, it could not be combined. When Congress amended it in 45, they changed loss or loss of use to just conditions, disability under conditions, which would entitle the veteran to two or more of the rates under subsections, what is now O, subsections L through N. No condition being considered twice in the determination. So Mr. Brennizer's position, that condition refers distinctly to loss of use, which he has at both feet, and helplessness is a separate condition. And the Board of Veterans' Appeals found as fact that Mr. Brennizer's service-connected disability renders him so helpless that he does require regular aid and attendance of another person.
Well, under O, it says no condition being considered twice.
Yes, Your Honor.
Now, if your position is correct that anything listed in L, loss of use, and a separate helplessness for whatever cause, that as long as it's service-connected, can be counted towards O, why would O include that language? Because wouldn't that be obvious? Why would Congress need to say we're not going to count loss of use of feet and loss of use of feet? Or...
Well, one problem is, as I tried to explain earlier, is that helplessness could not be combined with anything under O before the amendment in 1945. The legislative history that the government provided the court with a substitute brief shows that Congress really had two purposes that it wanted to accomplish when it amended the statute. One was to make helplessness available for combination with other conditions like loss of use of the feet, and also to remedy inequalities that existed in between various veterans and their SMC ratings. The VA regulation actually doesn't do anything to promote either of these purposes because it bars combination of helplessness with loss of use of the feet. And it actually creates inequality here because here you have a veteran who is found to require aid and attendance of another person, and the VA treats that veteran, Mr. Brennizer, just like another veteran who only has loss of use and no helplessness, exactly the same.
How is that not covered? I want to get back to this also, but how is your statement not addressed by P that says that if his disabilities exceed the requirements for any of the rates that he could get a P allowance? Would that address the inequality that you're pointing out, that somebody was loss of use plus needs aid and attendance?
If Your Honors decide that my argument is incorrect concerning the meaning of condition, then P would address it, I think. At least Mr. Brennizer may be able to get a full step with SMC because he has helplessness on top of his loss of use of the feet. But that's mostly an alternative argument here, that Congress really did want to make helplessness a condition that could be combined with other losses and loss of use. That's why they removed that language from the regulation prior in 1945.
Okay, well, I want to get back to in O, what does no condition being considered twice mean then?
What it would mean, in my interpretation, Your Honor, is that a veteran couldn't come in and say, I have loss of use of the feet, and I have my loss of use of the feet, and I get another L. That's the same condition. But loss of use of the feet is not the same. It isn't judged by the same criteria as aid and attendance. If Your Honors were to take a look at 38 CFR 3.350A2, that's the VA regulation that, excuse me, Your Honor, that's the VA regulation that provides the criteria for determining whether a veteran has loss of use of a foot, where the VA's criteria for aid and attendance is contained in 3.352. And there's no overlap. Loss of use is based on lack of propulsion, basically, where helplessness and aid and attendance.
I understand that they have different criteria, but I just don't understand why Congress would put in language saying, I can't come in and say I have loss of use of feet and loss of use of feet. That would seem obvious, and Congress wouldn't need to put that language in there.
Well, that language existed in the regulation before it was amended in 1945. The only difference was it said specified condition. So that language already existed in the regulation, just like the terms condition existed and condition. They were all in the regulation before its amendment. So when Congress amended the statute, they took out the word specified, left the note that you can't use the same condition twice, and then amended the regulation so that helplessness could actually be combined with other losses or loss of use.
Go ahead.
Mr. Horan, Your client certainly is a heroic American fighting up in the Chosin Reservoir in the peninsula in Korea. Let me ask you this. Do you think that Congress originally intended that your client receive 3 SMC awards?
I think Congress intended that he receive 2, that he goes to O, and then years later when Congress enacted R1, the plain language of R1 also indicates he gets that additional award on top because he needs 8 in attendance. So in 1945, R1 didn't exist. Only O existed. Congress amended that so that helplessness could be combined with other losses and loss of use. That's shown in the legislative history that the government presented to court attached to its substitute brief. And Congress wanted to also remedy inequalities that existed between certain veterans. So what we have here is Mr. Brenneiser basically is much more disabled than another veteran who only has loss of use of the feet. And the VA found, in fact, he requires regulating attendance, that he's made so helpless by his service-connected disability that he requires 8 in attendance of another person. That falls clearly within the purposes that Congress expressed.
Can you give me a citation over the last 66 years of either the VA or Congress or this court or the BVA accepting your interpretation as to this ambiguity with the word condition or conditions?
No, Your Honor, because I don't think the VA, the regulation has existed since apparently 1946. We don't even know why they adopted the regulation. The government argues in their brief that the regulation exists and therefore you have to defer to it, Your Honors, but that's not true. We have no idea why the VA, and they haven't explained why they adopted this regulation. But the VA, as the government points out, if they authored the regulation, I mean, the vet reg that Congress enacted in 1945, there's no statement anywhere therein where the VA says, oh, and by the way, if the veteran has loss of use of both feet and we find he requires regulating attendance, we intend to deny that. It's the exact opposite. They intended to grant it. So I think the language of the regulation, the change that Congress made in 1945, and the legislative history all demonstrate that Mr. Brenneiser is entitled to a separate award of 8 in attendance, because that was the whole point Congress wanted to make, was that helplessness be combined with other losses and losses of use.
Going to purpose, what would be the purpose in authorizing an additional 8 in attendance allowance under R? If aid in attendance was providing the bumped up benefit in O?
Well, the answer to that, Your Honor, because Congress amended the law, I think it was 1948, and they added R1 to the statute. The idea, Congress wanted to make sure that veterans who were most seriously disabled could actually afford to have someone aid them because they needed aid.
But didn't they get that under either L by itself or under O when it was combined under your argument?
But Congress is very generous, and they realized that veterans who had, they decided it wasn't enough under O.
All right. Go to L for a second. If the veteran, as a result of service-connected disability, has suffered the anatomical loss or loss of use of both feet, so what service-connected disability caused him to suffer the anatomical loss or loss of use of both feet?
Well, according to the VA rating, he's service connected for peripheral neuropathy, plantar fasciitis, and right now it's phenomenon.
Okay, so didn't he have exposure to cold?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right. Those disabilities you just mentioned caused the loss of both feet?
Loss of use of both feet, yes.
Loss of use of both feet. Now, what if a veteran had an injury that caused the loss or use of both feet? Would he not fall under L because there was no other service-connected disability that caused it?
Yes, Your Honor, he would.
He would still fall under L?
Yes.
So there's kind of a wording problem here, isn't there?
I'm sorry?
There's kind of a language problem in here, isn't there?
The language is a bit dense, Your Honor.
And go to O. If the veteran, as a result of the service-connected disability, has suffered disability under conditions which would entitle such veteran to 2 or more of the rates. What does conditions mean there?
Conditions relates back to the SMC rates under L, M, or N. And I think we can get that out of the statute itself, but we clearly can get it out of the vet reg before.
No, I got you on the reg. I'm just trying to figure this out. So the veteran, as a result of a service-connected disability, so if the veteran had an injury in service and lost both feet, and his disability is the loss of both feet, if the veteran, as a result of the service-connected disability, which is the loss of both feet, has suffered disability under conditions which would entitle such veteran to two or more rates, it's not flowing, is it?
It's not flowing.
It goes back to the same problem we demoted in L, isn't it?
It does. Conditions has to relate to the SMC rates provided because it expressly references L, M, or N and refers to the condition. Two or more conditions under L, M, or N.
So if they were to use, if the veteran as a result of service-connected disability has suffered disability under disability, which would entitle such veteran, that would be the distinction that you're trying to argue against, that it doesn't mean disability.
No, it doesn't. No.
Okay.
I'd like to ask you to look at M, please. M has specific language that's not included in L that says, for a veteran who has suffered blindness in both eyes, rendering, like it says, you know, has loss of use of both hands, et cetera, knee action, or has suffered blindness in both eyes, having only light perception, or has suffered blindness in both eyes, rendering such veteran so significantly disabled as to be in need of regular aid and attendance. So M seems to specifically contemplate a level of one of the conditions that triggers aid and attendance.
It does, Your Honor.
But L doesn't have that language.
No, it does not.
Are we to draw any inference from that inclusion or exclusion?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because Congress, when you look at the SMC ratings and the legislation, Congress basically decided or not decided who they wanted to give things to. They believe that blinded veterans, they give them an award for aid and attendance. And that, so some of it is arbitrary. Some are deemed more, I guess, worthy than other disabled veterans. But I don't think any conclusion could be drawn because Congress in M refers there to a blind veteran helplessness. Because L had helplessness before the amendment in 1945. And the whole point, that even the VA said this, the way O was written, helplessness could not be combined with any other condition because of the language of the vet reg as it existed before the amendment in 1945. The whole purpose of amending it, not the only purpose, but the primary purpose is so that helplessness could be available for combination to go to O for the most seriously disabled veterans and that's exactly what Mr. Brennizer is. He's a very seriously disabled veteran, and he falls within the purposes and intent of the 1945 amendment.
I'd like to shift gears a little bit to your argument regarding his stroke disability.
Yes, Your Honor.
I'd like to clarify, are you arguing that the loss of use of feet caused his strokes or aggravated his strokes?
Actually, there's two arguments in there. It's not the loss of use of the feet, it's the cold injury itself. And basically what we're trying to say is that he reasonably raised the claim of secondary service connection. If your honors were to look at record 48, 49, and 151, Mr. Brennizer argued to the VA before the BVA decision that the VA should consider his stroke and his residuals as a basis for an award of aid and attendance. So he did everything but, I respectfully submit, mention the word Allen in his pleadings to the VA. He didn't say Allen, he didn't say secondary service connection, but given that he was 76 years old, partially blind, very disabled, I think he raised the reasonable claim of secondary service connection. This is especially so when the BVA itself says, Mr. Brennizer reports that he has residuals of a stroke, and then they deny the claim for aid and attendance. I think the BVA, if you're going to deny under the regulation, perhaps they should have considered whether or not he had raised an adequate Allen secondary service connection claim.
So you're arguing that it's a whole separate claim that he would need to be service connected for, and then that would potentially entitle him to aid and attendance based on that disability?
We basically are only making the argument that the DA should consider this issue. I'd like to think that if we'd had the case down below that we would have made all these arguments. But when the court stayed the case and sought counsel, we thought that we provide as much authority as we could in supporting Mr. Bernheiser.
Thank you.
I see that I'm sorry, Your Honor.
I'm going to add some time. Go to the regulation, 3.50, the combinations. I think it's E3. Now, are you there? The secretary, as I understand it, has this regulation which excludes helplessness requiring regular aid and attendance if that's caused by the loss of, in this case, both feet, would not be considered separate. Is that correct in their regulation?
Yes, Your Honor.
What if it was bedridden, permanently bedridden? Does the regulation exclude that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and where does it say that? It seems to me it excludes bedridden if bedridden and aid in attendance are both considered. But if you read the first example, where a veteran has suffered the loss or loss of use of two extremities is being considered for the maximum rate on account of helplessness, the latter must be based on need resulting from pathology other than the other two extremities. If the loss or loss of use of the two extremities are being permanently bedridden, leaves the person helpless, increase is not in order. Under no circumstances will bedridden be combined with helplessness. So they don't have an example. It looks to me like they didn't. Well, and it does say example, so that might be the answer. But it looks like the example is both feet or one hand and one foot or blind in both eyes. If that causes the need for ANA, the secretary says it can't be combined.
That's right, Your Honor.
But the secretary doesn't say that to permanently bedridden.
The only thing I can say to that, Your Honor, is I don't know if the VA has ever assigned a bedridden reading to anybody. This is off the record, but I knew reading special years ago, and he said he never saw anyone, VA, award anyone bedridden.
Thank you much. Unless there's another question, your time's up.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. Let me ask you off the bat, right off. If you had, a veteran had anatomical loss of both feet and separately had a need for regular aid and attendance on other disabilities that were service-connected, would they fall under L and bump into O?
I'll just restate that, Your Honor. If a veteran has lost use of feet and separate total disability that would require aid and attendance, yes, that would fall under O.
All right. And if he fell under O for loss of both feet and the need for regular aid and attendance, would he then bump and get an additional aid and attendance under R1?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you.
The parties are in agreement that the appellant, Mr. Bernheiser, is severely disabled as a result of his service during the Korean War. However, obviously, we disagree as to the compensation that VA is authorized by Congress to pay Mr. Bernheiser for his injuries. Appellant seeking the maximum level of special monthly compensation available under law, which is found under subsection O of 1114. Congress at the time of its codification explained that this maximum rate was for our nation's most severely disabled veterans. Appellant has alleged that through its rulemaking, VA has wrongly denied him the appropriate level of compensation. Now, while appellant may have arguably revealed a perceived unfairness in the law regarding the level of special monthly compensation, he's pursuing his remedy in the wrong venue. VA has acted within the law as set by Congress.
Why don't we just go right to the statute? I'm trying to figure out. L seems to say that if you've suffered any one of these disabilities or have been permanently bedridden or had significant disabilities in need of regular aid and attendance, you would get this benefit authorized under L. And O seems to say that if you have any two of those, you get this increased benefit. And you just told me that it's not inconsistent to then add on another aid in attendance under R1. So if Congress is providing all these benefits, what's the reason the Secretary comes out 40 years ago or whenever they do, writes a regulation that hasn't yet been reviewed, and says, no, you can't combine them, despite what Congress said, you can't combine them?
Your Honor, under subsection O, VA really had in mind, and not in any way to slight the appellant here, who certainly conceded severely disabled, VA had in mind the most severely disabled of veterans, particularly from World War II. These were the veterans who didn't just have amputation or loss of use of extremities, but they also had blindness, deafness.
Yeah, but you're dealing with some facts here that were found by the board, so we can't ignore that.
Yes, Your Honor.
The facts found by the board are, because of the loss of use or loss of both feet, this veteran, for whatever reason, this veteran is in need of regular aid and assistance also.
That's correct,
aid and attendance.
And under L, I'll point out that the qualifying condition under L is not the need for regular aid and attendance. It's the such significant disabilities as to be in need of regular aid and attendance.
All right, well, this board found that the loss of both feet in this case was significant enough to result in the need of regular aid and attendance. I mean, that's a fact.
Yes, Your
Honor. You might want to not like it, think it's appropriate, but it's a fact that we have before us.
And Your Honor, I certainly agree with that fact. And if I were adjudicating this under L, I would write that the veteran has, number one, one qualifying condition is the loss of use of both feet. The second condition would be the loss of use of both feet as to result in a need for regular aid and attendance. So, Your Honor, you can see that the condition of loss of use of both feet is the premise for both of those separate qualifications under subsection L, if it's read that way.
I don't think anyone's arguing that. That's obvious.
Yes, Your Honor. And that
but this veteran does have the loss of both feet, and for whatever reason, this veteran also has need of regular aid and attendance. Because
yes,
of the lost feet.
Yes, sir. And going to subsection O, that condition is the loss of use of both feet. That condition, as it says in subsection O, cannot be considered twice in making that determination of eligibility under subsection O.
Now, what do you define condition to mean?
Condition in using the context actually has a couple of different meanings, Your Honor. If I were to read subsection O in that way, I would say if the veteran, as a result of service-connected disability, has suffered disability under circumstances for the first use of condition as a different alternative word, would entitle such veteran to two or more of the rates provided in one or more subsections L through N of this section, no, and then replacing conditions there with disability or combination of disabilities under subsections L through N being considered twice in the determination.
So do you consider being bedridden a disability?
I, Your Honor, unfortunately, I was not prepared to address the issue of bedridden because it was not raised in this case.
Okay, do you consider being in need of regular aid and attendance to be a disability?
I don't, Your Honor. I consider that it's not a disability in and of itself. The loss of use of both feet in this case is the disability, and it results in the need for aid and attendance.
Okay, so let me back you up then. If a hypothetical veteran had the loss of use of feet and then required aid and attendance for a different service-connected condition, would he be qualified to receive benefits under O?
If I'm understanding that's similar, if not the same, to Judge Castle's question, we have a loss of use of extremities and separate total disability with aid and attendance. Yes, Your Honor, that would qualify a veteran under subsection O.
Okay. Well, if aid and attendance isn't a condition under O, based on your prior response, then how does that qualify him under the second hypothetical, or under this hypothetical?
Your Honor, the disability would be the underlying condition that's that other disability that requires a need for aid and attendance. So, for instance, if I could make maybe a hypothetical up to explain it better, if a veteran, say, had loss of use of both feet and also had a condition that's listed nowhere on L through M, which would be a traumatic brain injury, for instance, if that veteran, by virtue of a traumatic brain injury, required the need for aid and attendance in addition to his or her loss of use of extremities, that would be a veteran who would be entitled under subsection O.
Congress used the word disability in a lot of places, and VA, in requesting the 1945 regulatory or legislative changes, used qualifying disability to describe helplessness. So if Congress meant disability, as you advocate for the second conditions in O, why didn't it use the term disability?
Well, as I mentioned in the brief, VA, of course, proposed it in the form that was largely identical to how it was enacted. I think that the language was largely lifted from the previous the executive order VA regulation number one that was currently in effect, which essentially used those terms in the same way. And those terms didn't in any way refer to helplessness or the need for aid and attendance. They only referred to the loss of use or anatomical loss of use at that time. I think, you know, as Judge Lance pointed out, that language made it into the statute and has remained with it to this day, despite more than 60 years of VA regulation interpreting that statute.
If I could follow on with two hypothetical questions spawned by Judge Schoen's incisive inquiry. Let's assume that we have an IED injury coming back from Iraq, loss of both feet, and that soldier or Marine or whomever can be fitted with prosthetic devices that he or she may put on themselves and mobilize themselves and get around. What is that veteran entitled to?
Your Honor, the veteran with loss of use of both feet that's suitable for prostheses would, depending on the level of amputation, would be, we'll assume at the below the knee, would be at the L level.
All right. Same situation, same circumstance, except prosthetic devices don't work, and so the individual is bedridden and housebound. What is he or she entitled to?
If the veteran is... Now, there are certain factors that in the L ratings that involve without being able to use a suitable prosthesis, Your Honor. So depending on the level of amputation, that veteran would be probably at the M or the N level, if they're which would be higher than the L level, because that factors into a veteran not being able to use prostheses.
However, you see the distinction I'm trying to draw, one of which is that the individual is not helpless and would receive, I believe, under these regulations, the same compensation, if we were to accept your argument, as the individual who was bedridden or helpless.
Well, in your second scenario, Your Honor...
You're getting paid for the loss of both feet, but the conditions and circumstances are substantially different.
Yes, Your Honor, and that's one of the reasons why, if you look at the language of M, N, and O, depending on the level of amputation and whether or not a prosthesis can be used would determine that level. For instance, a veteran who's lost both arms, if this is the same veteran in IED blast, has lost both arms disarticulated at the shoulder, not suitable for prostheses, that veteran would be at the O level because it's contemplated in that veteran probably, you know, that's a maximum level of disability that Congress envisioned under subsection O. Especially if that veteran cannot use prostheses.
Is the Secretary's position that somebody who, like in the scenario that Judge Lance presented, had the two leg amputations but was in need of aid and attendance, would they be eligible for a P award because their disability exceeds the level contemplated?
No, Your Honor, unless there were other qualifying disabilities, such as Mr. Prenderson now receives, he has an additional 50% rating due to hearing loss, and because of that, he's entitled to an additional half step.
So it has to be for a totally separate condition? I thought it says in the event his disabilities exceed the requirement for any of the rates prescribed in this section. So in Mr., I believe it's Brenizer's circumstances, he is more disabled than just the L award because he exceeds having just the loss of use. He also requires aid and attendance. How is that not exceeding the requirement for the rate?
Well, Your Honor, Mr. Brenderson's award is contemplated by the L. He has such significant disabilities as to be in need of regular aid and attendance. He has such significant disability being loss of use of the feet as to be in need of regular aid and attendance. So he is being compensated at the level based on someone who has severe disabilities.
He's not getting two L's.
No, Your Honor, but he is being compensated within the that subsection of L, loss of use of the feet as to be in need of regular aid and attendance. If Mr. Brenizer had some other disability, as he does now subsequent to the board's decision, that he certainly, 3.350 subsection F, prescribes many circumstances that VA has stated that what would be either an intermediate half rate or a full rate.
Can you give me an example of Mr. Brenneiser, you know, hypothesizing off of his circumstances, where his situation might entitle him to a P based on the same loss of use of feet?
Your Honor, I don't know of any circumstance that he would be entitled to a P. For instance, if his hearing loss were total as opposed to the 60% level now, it's possible that he'd be able to be elevated by a full step, but that full step would still bring him to an M rating. He's currently at the intermediate rate between L and M, which is what we call L and a half. So that would say if his hearing loss became worse, then he could certainly go another half step.
See, the part that I'm having trouble with is the very inequity that Mr. Horan pointed out, that in Judge Lance's example as well, that if Mr. Brenneiser has two potentially qualifying conditions for an L, but they are based on the same disability, he is clearly more disabled than a veteran who has only one qualifying disability. And irrespective of the cause of it, he's equally disabled to a veteran that needs aid and attendance for something else and has this loss of use of feet. So why is it that Congress didn't intend to cover him amongst the most disabled veterans that you've referenced?
Your Honor, getting to the second part of your question, I think it's clear under O that although Mr. Brenneiser is severely disabled, he is not what Congress envisioned as the most severely disabled veterans. Looking back to the legislative history, VA in drafting the proposal explained some of the veterans' cases that were the impetus for asking Congress to liberalize subsection O. You know, these involved some of the first cases VA was seeing of paralysis of the lower extremities combined with incontinence. Other cases where a veteran had lost several extremities and had blindness and deafness. And prior to the liberalization, these veterans didn't fall under O. That was what VA and as adopted by Congress, that was the picture of what was considered to be the most severely disabled veterans. These were veterans not just with loss of use or loss of extremities, but with something, another total disability on top of that. And that total disability on top of the loss of use of extremities rendered these veterans helpless. So the fact that the veteran has to suffer.
How many veterans have loss of both feet and a fact finding by the board that they are in need of regular aid and attendance because of that?
Your Honor, I don't have any information to respond to that question.
You know, you have the facts that you have, and you're trying to fit those facts into a statute. At the end of the day, could end up in interpretation that might end up in court again later on. Sure seems to me you ought to run with the facts you have, live with the facts you have, and you might talk to opposing counsel and resolve this. Because I think you're trying to put something in here that just doesn't fit. To say somehow that a veteran who found by the board has lost his feet and also is in need of regular aid and attendance is somehow not viewed by Congress as having two separate situations that under the statute throw them into O, and as you say, then gets R1. Just doesn't seem like it's the type of argument you'd want to make. But anyway, I just wanted to share that.
With all due respect, Your Honor, I think this, you know, not every single allowance for SMC contemplates every single scenario that could be possible. Congress didn't provide that in subsections K through P. This veteran is being compensated at the level of for significant disabilities as to be in need of regular aid and attendance. So he is receiving the monetary amount of currently without a spouse, $3,327 per month. A veteran with a total disability is compensated at $2,673 per month. And a veteran at the housebound rate is compensated at just under $3,000 a month. So this veteran is receiving significantly more, approximately $700 per month, more than a veteran with 100% total disability rating. So I would just want to, Your Honor, put this in perspective when we talk about the fairness. This veteran is receiving, although it can't make him whole No amount of money can make his injuries whole. He is receiving a sizable monthly allowance based on his disabilities that result in his need for aid and attendance.
I'd like to sort of take a bigger picture here. Is the Secretary's position that 1114.0 is clear on its face, or are we to look to the regulation to gap fill?
Your Honor, I have two answers. Our perspective is...
Yes and no?
It is clear on its face, Your Honor, but obviously we probably wouldn't be here unless someone in this room thought, you know, it said something differently than I'm telling you it says. So I do recognize that the court, if you don't accept my explanation of what the words condition and conditions meant when I read it before, then certainly if we go beyond the plain language of the statute, then we're left with, you know, the legislative intent, which in the brief and the appendices explained, you know, what VA was seeking of Congress, what Congress discussed in discussing that it was loss of extremities, double total disability based on other pathology, and that Congress clearly knew based on VA's proposal and its own discussions what it was adopting in subsection O.
If we look to 3.3503, E3, I'm sorry, which I think is implementing O and P, and it talks about combinations, and it says under no circumstances will aid and attendance be combined with, without a separate distinct anatomical loss or loss of use of two extremities or blindness entitling to a maximum benefit. And then it says, however, two separate and distinct entitling disabilities, such as the anatomical loss or loss of use of both hands and both feet, resulting from a common etiological agent, for example, one injury or rheumatoid arthritis, will not preclude maximum entitlement. And I'm sort of having a difficulty in reconciling those two positions based on how you described what condition means.
Your Honor, if I'll maybe give you a hypothetical example to explain the end of the paragraph that you were referring to, mm-hmm. with the arthritis and mm-hmm. if a veteran, say they had multiple sclerosis as an example, that veteran would of course be service connected for an underlying multiple sclerosis, but an adjudicator would evaluate all of the distinct separate disabilities that stem from multiple sclerosis. So that particular veteran might have loss of use of the lower extremities. That veteran might have incontinence. That veteran might have neurological problems. And all these disabilities in and of themselves would be separately rated. So the veteran still could have, you know, loss of use and incontinence. And these would be separate conditions than when applied under 3.350E3, and also under 11140, would then qualify that veteran for SMC at the maximum level.
I understand that they are separately rated, but the cause of the veteran's condition is still multiple sclerosis or rheumatoid arthritis. And in this circumstance, the cause of the veteran's condition is a cold injury residual. So, to me, is the Secretary creating an artificial distinction here between those that receive separate diagnostic code and awards versus those that are sort of rated more holistically?
I don't think so, Your Honor. In this instance, a veteran, of course, is really not rated for, say, loss of use more than he has several separate lower extremity disabilities, peripheral neuropathy, plantar fasciitis, Raynaud's. Those separate disabilities, which most favorably adjudicated for him, results in an award of loss of use of both extremities, which would entitle him at the L level. So I hope I'm understanding your question and answering it.
Well, I think you've gotten as far as you can go with that.
Yeah.
I'd like to turn to his stroke secondary service connection or theory for ANA argument. What is the Secretary's position that he's presented or has not presented an alternate theory?
Your Honor, up until today, his brief didn't contain any allegation of any reasonably raised claim in the record. I don't recall any specific.
I believe there was something in his supplemental pleadings.
Okay, I didn't recall, but he mentions record 48 to 49. At that time, the veteran stated, being wheelchair-bound alone with my inability to propel the chair from residuals of a stroke suffered in 1997 by myself could have a disastrous result. And at 151, the veteran stated that his stroke had presented left-sided weakness that limited his use of his left arm and hand needed to propel his wheelchair. The only way that the residuals of the stroke have been presented in the record is only because the veteran said because of the loss of use of his feet, he's wheelchair-bound and is having a difficult time moving his wheelchair as a result of those residuals. He's in no way raised that he's actually claiming that his stroke had any, whether it's cause or aggravation, by his service-connected cold weather injuries.
Well, this is probably premature, but I'd like to thank both counsel for very extensive and very helpful briefs. I understand you still have to. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor. If there are no further questions, Your Honors, the Secretary respectfully asks this Court to reject appellant's challenges to the validity of VA's rulemaking with respect to 38 CFR 3.350E3 and asks that the Court affirm the February 5, 2009 Board of Veterans Appeals decision in all respects.
Thank you.
Your Honors, Your Honors, I don't really think I need to do rebuttal unless the Court has questions.
It looks like we don't have any questions.
Mr. Brennmeiser respectfully requests that the Court invalidate 3.350E3 and that the Court order the VA to award him a separate award of aid and attendance and benefits under R1. Thank you.
Thank you. The case will be submitted. We'll come down and greet counsel.